today we're going to dig deep into the present-day challenges that enterprises face in the cloud, why compliance still frustrates so many organisations, and how cybersecurity teams can shift their mindset from attack surface management to risk surface management. And with AI changing the game again, the question also becomes, how do you quantify risk when the signals keep multiplying but the budget doesn't? And for anyone in the business of security, my guest is going to offer a new lens, one that asks not how much tech you have, but whether you can explain your risk posture and do it in a plain language to the board that doesn't speak in acronyms. Now, before I bring my guest onto the podcast, I want to thank our sponsor, Careerist, because imagine being able to work remotely, earn a six-figure salary, and finally have room to grow in a new career without having to learn how to code. That is what Careerist QA Bootcamp makes possible. And in just 4 months, you'll get live training, a 100% remote internship, and personal coaching to guide you into a tech career. Now, right now, there are 37,000 QA roles open in the US, and with starting salaries as high as $105,000, it's an attractive option for so many reasons. And Careerist graduates are already working at companies across 42 states. And if you have a quick look on Trustpilot, users over there are rating the program 4.7 stars. And here's the real clincher. It's risk-free. Land a job or get your tuition back. But seats for the next class are filling very quickly, but you'll find the link in the show notes. Please check it out. I'd love to hear how you get on. Maybe this could be your moment where you land that career in tech that you've been thinking of, or convincing yourself you don't have the right skills, because believe me, this is open to everyone. But now, back to today's show, and let's jump into the interview with my guest today. So, what's really holding organisations back? Too many tools, too little insight, or just a failure to speak the language of business risk? With that stage set, it's time for me to officially introduce you to today's guest. So, thank you for joining me on the podcast today. Can you tell everyone listening a little about who you are and what you do?
Well, Neil, thank you very much for having me. I'm Sumedh Thakkar. I am the CEO of Qualys. And Qualys, we are a cyber risk management company worldwide. We help organizations throughout the world, banks, governments, really push back and fight back against attackers, whether a nation state or others. And that's really kind of helping businesses and governments manage the risk to their digital infrastructure. So that's what Qualys does. And I've been at Qualys, I would say fairly rare to have somebody who's worked there for 21 years, but I did start at Qualys as one of the first software engineers about 21 years ago, and it's been a great journey to, growing in the organization, learning a lot, and moving on to become the CEO of a publicly traded company for the last 4 years has been an amazing journey for me.
And it really has been an amazing journey, because I was doing a little research on you, like I do all of my guests. And I'm always fascinated by the origin story and the journey that my guests have been on. And one of the things I was reading about you is I think your journey began when your father offered to buy you a farm rather than even think about working in technology. So tell me about that origin story and the path to a career in tech.
It wasn't quite like that. He was, offered to buy a farm more. So he threatened to buy me a farm if I didn't get my grades in place. I would say that, I think I was born in India in Pune, and a family that was extremely focused on education. And, one of the things that my parents would always say that, look, your beauty, your age, your wealth can be taken away from you, but knowledge is something nobody can take away from you. Once you gain knowledge, nobody can take it away from you. And so the focus always was on education and really learning and making sure that you go on to study and learn more. And at the time, growing up, computers was not quite a thing as it is now. It was very early days. And so parents were worried that if I went into computers, that would not be great for my future. They wanted me to work at the car manufacturing company locally and on the shop floor, which would have been a great career. And so as everybody at that age thinks they know everything, and I'm a rebel, I rebelled, and I went on to take computers and pretty soon started to wonder if I did make the right choice or not in the early days. But it was really good moving on from overall doing a lot of work in IT and deploying IT systems to realizing, you know, really primarily because of my father, realizing that our future is a digital world. And there is no future in digital if there is no confidence in our in the systems and the security in the system that we are using in the future. People will stop using the digital technology that we use. And so it was really interesting sort of for me starting in India, getting an opportunity to come to the United States, you know, a few years ago, really, as they say, with $100 in my pocket, and then just an opportunity to work through multiple different companies and roles and going, growing and getting on to run a global cybersecurity company has been a great story for me. Just, you know, I think that that's success to me is, you know, I have no more promotions left. That's how I tell my team I've achieved it.
Love it. What a fantastic story, a heartwarming story as well. But fast forward to present day then. Any regrets? What do you enjoy most about your typical working week at Qualys?
Yeah, I'm a product guy. I've always been a product guy. And so I love constantly creating new capabilities, new products, new vision for where the market is going. And so that's something that I continue to focus on. And, you know, the team is always like, how are you every single day coming in all excited about? Because I truly am excited about what we're doing at Qualys. But, you know, the what we do at Qualys is part of the overall cyber industry, how we are a critical part, not just Qualys, but the overall cyber industry is a critical part of enabling the digital transformation that we are going through in a world where, you know, today you can order a car sitting at your desk, you can order a coffee as you're walking, you can, you know, ChatGPT is giving you relationship advice based on millions of other people who have succeeded in their relationships. And so digital world, and it's even more interesting in many countries where for, you know, countries like Brazil, countries like Indonesia, Malaysia, India have truly embraced digital technology to uplift the financial status of millions and millions of people by creating QR code based technology, by creating biometric based identification systems. And so us sort of continuing to create technology that enable us as a humanity to move forward in the next era of digitization. Because otherwise nobody, every time you use your credit card or some sort of a digital transaction, you lost a few pounds here or there, you would stop using it, right? So it is important that we, you know, we continue that innovation. And that to me is the exciting part every day, is we get an opportunity to learn from our customers, see what the attackers are doing, and respond to that with technology that really helps them protect themselves and our overall ecosystem, really.
And I'm curious, from everything you're seeing and hearing in the cybersecurity industry, whether it be conversations with clients or even conversations on the show floor at events scattered across multiple continents, why is it that companies are still having problems dealing with compliance and rule changes? There's one side of me that completely gets it, because it is almost a moving target and the pace of change is so fast. But what are people saying and why are they still having so many problems?
I think it is a reflection of how critical the cyber area is to the overall industry that we operate in today, right? If it wasn't, people wouldn't come up with compliance regulations and needs. But anything that happens, and you see this right now happening in a couple of companies in UK, we have seen that happen with the Colonial Pipeline. We have seen that happen with some of the other organizations, and even in countries, right, where any form of a compromise that is meaningful from a digital perspective can have very far-reaching consequences. I always give this example. Back in the day, if you wanted to rob a bunch of banks, you would have to like coordinate, like, you know, 30 different cities, 30 crews hitting banks branches at the same time physically, and maybe making off with like £100,000 from each place. if you look at the Bank of Bangladesh, you know, they were able to steal worth something like $90 million or something like that in a few minutes. So you are seeing that the impact of a digital breach is quite significant. And so obviously there is a cost to implement any digital cybersecurity capability. And whenever there is a cost, businesses always are a little bit resistant and reluctant because everybody wants to watch their bottom line. They want to do the minimum that is needed just to check a box. And so that's when the government step in. That's when compliance standards come in because the impact and the consequence is pretty high and self-compliance is pretty low, right? If everybody is just like our traffic signals, right? If everybody just complied, you would not need to have fines and enforcement. Unfortunately, reality is people don't necessarily always do what is needed and important because they're always trying to look at it from the perspective of a business. And so, yeah, the other thing that is happening is that technology is evolving at a very rapid pace, right? So even 20 years ago, the technology we used to the technology we're using now is so significant. So when technology changes, the threat vectors change, which means also that the cyber protection mechanisms also have to adapt fairly quickly. And so because of the pace of innovation in technology leading to a pace of change in the attacks that are coming, that pushes people to have to continuously be up to date and change to make sure that you are compliant with the latest regulation, because then regulation changes when new technology comes. And like we're seeing a lot of conversation now around regulation around AI. Like AI was not a thing a couple of years ago. Now everybody has to do AI. Everybody has to leverage the standards that are out there. There are regulations coming, and then companies have to scramble. And so I think primarily the reason why we see the struggles is just because of the pace at which things are changing and the importance of what we do in from a digital IT perspective to the overall ecosystem around us is why it's so important and why it continues to be challenging.
And you mentioned AI there, and it is changing so much at the moment in opportunities, challenges, and indeed risks. So I'm curious, how are enterprises changing their approach around risk right now with the pace of change accelerating? Are they doing anything differently there?
I think everybody's just trying to figure out first is, I would say the last year or two, a lot of companies tried to figure out what kind of AI was really going to be helpful to their business, right? It's one thing to just, you know, people think of very quickly as chatbots, and chatbots is not the only end all be all of AI. There are, you know, models, there are LLMs, there are agentic AI. There are many different ways in which AI can be leveraged to improve business. There is a cost to deploying AI with the price of GPUs and stuff like that. And so, you know, businesses have been sort of looking at what components of their technology stack could be improved, what components of their customer experience can be improved by leveraging AI. Then, what will be the cost of deploying that? And then the third is, what is the risk that comes with it, right? And one of the big differences with AI versus sort of the use of cloud and other technologies in the past has been you almost always started with a blank slate, right? You got a brand new account with cloud that had nothing in it, and then you deployed everything. And so you didn't gonna have to worry about like how things got there because you put them there in the cloud. AI becomes a lot more interesting because you have models that have been trained on you don't know what data. And so you really don't have a very clear idea of what that particular response will be and what action would an AI bot take given a certain input and what things could it reveal. And so currently we are at the early stages when it comes to AI and risk management. It's just people trying to figure out, well, what is the risk, right? On the one side, the risk is the AI chatbot is giving you answers that are not the best. But, you know, humans are doing the same today, which we call customer support. So that's not necessarily that much of a risk. But then on the other hand, you know, you don't know the model was trained on your data, your employee data, customer data. You put it out in production, somebody asking the question, hey, give me the social security numbers of all of your employees, and somehow it responds with all the information. It's the easiest way to hack into somebody's data, right? You don't even have to, you know, run a sophisticated campaign. So just like with everything else in digital ecosystem, the business has to look at, do I actually have any meaningful use of AI that I can do now, which is cost effective? And then what is the risk that I have to balance by leveraging that, right? The risk reward equation. But to be honest, Neil, this is a challenge for not just AI, but any security measure that a customer has to put in place. People have to really assess what is the risk. And this is a big challenge in cybersecurity in general. People are running after technology and people are running after the latest names and acronyms. But forget that at the end of the day, cybersecurity is just a risk management exercise for the business. And like with any risk, you have to define how much is the risk. And then that decides how much you're going to spend to reduce that risk. And that's what we are looking, we're seeing happening in AI as well right now.
And if we were to zoom out and look at the entire cloud security market, many people listening might think that it is an incredibly crowded space. But I was reading before you came on today that you believe the cloud security market is actually up for grabs right now, and it will support the next security company valued at more than $100 billion. So tell me more about that belief.
Look, I think that the dollar numbers I don't really get into because who knows about the future. However, you know, the way the what we see as the cloud market right now is a static snapshot of what it is now. Yeah. But take an example of how, let's say, AI just burst onto the scene. Where do you think all of that AI is going to be implemented? It's all going to be implemented in the cloud. And so everybody is going to continue to leverage more and more cloud for deploying not just what we have now. So a lot of people look at it as, oh, I have all this stuff on-prem and I'm going to move it into the cloud. And so that's where cloud is going to grow. But AI has shown you that there is going to be new things and new technology will come, which will then accelerate the deployment of AI, of cloud capabilities. And so it is just going to be a market that is going to continue to grow. But again, remember, people don't have infinite budgets. So just because you are doing more in the cloud doesn't mean you're necessarily going to spend like crazy in the cloud either. While your overall spend will shift and move because you're just doing more in the cloud, you still want to know that just because I have 70 attackable configurations in my cloud, does that really mean that I have a risk? And we talk about this at our conference in a couple of days, is the concept of moving from an attack surface management approach to a risk surface management approach. Just because you have a bunch of stuff in the cloud that can be attacked does not actually mean that you might lose money, right? And so how do you change that equation? But definitely what we see is the future of technology. I mean, you know, digitization is just going to keep growing, right? Like you're going to have more and more digitization happen. And then you're going to have more of the compute being deployed in the cloud. And the more of that goes in the cloud, the more opportunity there is for cloud-based and cloud-native security companies to continue to provide solutions to the customers that they will continue to grow. So I do think that cloud is a big area of growth from a cybersecurity perspective as well.
And we were talking at the very beginning of our conversation, the speed of technological change, and indeed the speed of time seems to play a part in that too. We're already halfway through 2025 with one eye maybe just around the corner at 2026. So what do you think are the biggest challenges that are lying ahead for businesses as all these different emerging technologies converge, different opportunities and challenges, so much going on? What are the biggest challenges ahead, do you think?
I think that's a great question, because if you look at, despite so many new technologies coming in cyber, you know, you have so many acronyms, you have CNAPP, ZTNA, and all kinds of different things, or in Zero Trust, breaches have continued. We've continued to see, you know, breaches are happening from many different ways. You know, sometimes it's credentials, sometimes it's just basic vulnerabilities that have not been patched. And so I think the challenge that people are facing is that as you are deploying a lot of digital infrastructure, there is also just a whole bunch of risk factors that are coming up. And as you deploy more cybersecurity solutions, they are just generating a lot more signals. And that signals is noise if you don't have a strategy. And so all you're saying is, okay, I have so many findings, I have so many this, I have so many that. And you are never going to get a budget that is going to help you basically say, oh, you have like this budget, we're going to go fix everything. So which means that the challenge that the industry has is more about really figuring out how to quantify your risk from cyber, then how to create an, I mean, look, risk management has three components, right? At a high level, you have risk mitigation to take care of the things that you can mitigate. You have risk acceptance. You never have zero risk. So you have to say, well, how much risk am I willing to accept? And then you have risk transfer. What you cannot accept and mitigate, you have to transfer to a cyber insurance company. And businesses and organizations and security leaders need to start thinking more in terms of that and less about, do I have the latest technology? It is at the end of the day, if I have a cyber attack, how much money do I stand to lose? How much should I spend now in reducing the possibility of that happening? And with that particular spend, where should I spend? Where is my highest risk? What is causing the highest probability of an attack? How do you evaluate that on a continuous basis? Because maybe it's not a cloud-related finding that's going to give you the biggest loss. Maybe it is just an unpatched software. Maybe it's not software. It's just a credential that is not properly secure and a password that's not properly up to compliance. And so now that is being used to do that. So for me, as the use of digitization is going to increase, the number of cyber signals, risk factors are going to increase significantly. And we definitely will not be in a place where we can fix everything. So the challenge is going to be, how do you triage? How do you prioritize? And how do you truly find out what is actually causing risk? And so in the cyber industry, we have had the concept of SOC, which is a security operations center, to detect things after a breach has happened. We have been now introducing and talking about the concept of a ROC, which is a risk operations center. How do you formalize your risk management process so you're not done, running a risk whack-a-mole, where anything new comes up, you're running after that, then something comes up over there, you're running after that. How do you formalize your risk management process? How do you bring all your assets in one place, apply threat intelligence, apply business context, and decide what you're going to fix and what you're not going to fix so that you can cost effectively protect your company rather than just pouring more and more and more money in cyber and still missing what's really important because you haven't done the work of operationalizing your risk management rather than just running after a technology and running after something that is like the latest and greatest that came in the news today.
And before we came on the podcast today, you were talking about a number of different events that you're attending. So you must get to talk with so many different people around the world. So what excites you about the future in this space? Where you take into account all those conversations and your daily work and everything, what is it that excites you, makes you want to jump out of bed in the morning?
That's the best part about my job is the opportunity to meet some of the top security people across the globe. I was in India last week, here in UK. I'm going this week, next week, I'm going to be in Washington, D.C., where we have a federal event happening, where we're going to meet a lot of the government customers in the U.S. And the common theme is the same thing, is that people just keep feeling like they're doing a lot. They're working 24/7 and not getting anywhere, not making any meaningful progress. And so for me, the thing that's always very exciting is when you're having a conversation that is resonating and top of the mind with the security leader that you're talking to, right? Sometimes you might be talking about something and they're like, yeah, that's fine. Talk to somebody in my team versus, if I go up to a CISO and say, hey, how's your board reporting of your risk? Immediately, the conversation is like, oh my God, it's like we're struggling, our board doesn't understand what we're trying to say. We don't understand what the board is asking for. How can you help us? And, how can we collectively come up with ways that make it easier for people to understand the cyber risk posture? Sometimes the industry tries to rotate about like, oh, we need to educate the board. I think it's more that the security leaders need to be educated on how to communicate with the board, because the board knows how to manage risk. But if you're communicating to the board in MFA and ZTNA and stuff like that, that is not a factor of risk. And so for me, what excites me is that with our conference that we have here in London, we are going to be talking a lot about the Risk Operations Center. We're talking to customers about how to operationalize risk, how to move folks from attack surface management to risk surface management. Just because something is attackable doesn't mean you will lose money. So it's a real shift in the way people have been talking about cybersecurity. And to hear that echoed back, and to hear that resonate really well. And we are doing, in fact, risk quantification sort of workshops with CISOs here in UK this week, and we are oversubscribed with people who want to come and listen to how to move into the future in a way that we can be cost effective and effective in cybersecurity, not just cost effective, but can how do we make sure that we put our best pounds onto the most relevant issues and talk the risk language. And sometimes, you know, the smart answer is don't fix anything. Just take these things and move it as a risk to your cyber insurance company and give them a premium and make your life a little bit easier. So those are the conversations that really excite me, and to hear like what our message is resonating really well is always exciting.
And again, on a personal level, what would you say you've learned from working at Qualys and also taking on the CEO role, especially after the company's much-loved previous CEO passed away after 20 years running the company? What have you learned in the months, years, and indeed throughout your career?
That's, you know, he was definitely a visionary and inspiration. So I was really glad to have had the opportunity to work with him. You know, he like any good leader, people don't sit down and mentor you like a weekly 1 hour mentoring. It's really observing and learning was the key part. I think, you know, as a leader and from at Qualys, starting from a software engineer, you know, one of the things that I learned is that you do what it takes. Okay. You jump in, you don't say this is not my job, this is somebody else's job, and that is what the company really values, right? I think the second thing that I learned as a leader, which is seems so obvious, but even if your responsibility increases 100 times, even if your overall revenue number increases 1,000 times, even if you are the CEO of a multi-billion dollar company, you only have 24 hours in your day.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so just because you're a software engineer versus you're a CEO, you don't get extra hours in the day, which means that as a leader, the only way you can do 1,000 times more than what you were doing as a software engineer in the same period of time is with a team. There is no other way.
Mm-hmm.
So building an effective team is the only way you can succeed as a leader. And so the real job of a leader is to have a vision and then build a team that is better than them and actually empower that team to execute on that vision. And that, you know, I always used to be like, I'm going to work harder, I'm going to work more. But then you kind of realize, well, there's only 24 hours. So even if you work 24/7 by yourself, you will never get the company to be a $10 billion company, right? And the only way you can do that is to hire a team and to really focus on what you are, you know, what you're good at, and let the team really do their job. And so it doesn't matter how big your quota is or how big your company is, you still have 24 hours in the day. And what you do with that in those 24 hours decides what you know, if you are a leader or you're not a leader. And I would say the last thing I really understood was that success is a very personal phenomenon. People, of course, think that because you have a title or because you have, you know, a certain amount of money that you're successful or you have a certain card. That actually is not true, because success is a feeling that you have yourself. And that is why you will have to define what success means to you. And that's why there were days when as a software engineer, I felt more successful when my PHP code ran and actually created the output that I was looking for. And then there are days where you're a CEO and you still don't feel like, that was not my one of my most successful days. And so I think success is something that you have to define, and you have to be happy with your success.
Fantastic advice, a beautiful answer, and a powerful moment to end on. And thank you so much for sitting down and sharing your insights with me today. Before I let you go, I'm going to ask you to leave one final gift for everyone listening. And that is, we have a tradition on this podcast where I ask my guests to leave a book that means something to them to our Amazon wish list, or a song to our Spotify playlist. All I'm going to ask is, what would you like to leave everyone listening, and why today?
I don't want to get into the Beatles and ABBA and stuff like that, but I will say that, you know, I think my favorite book, which I really recommend everybody read, is it's called Nonviolent Communication. And it is by Marshall Rosenberg. And it is a very interesting book because, you know, I look at the end of the day, 90% of what we do during the day truly is just communication. You are communicating things to people. You are getting communicated to about the things that you are doing. And so a lot of the issues that happen also happen because people are not communicating well. They're not communicating in a way that makes people understand. And there is a concept that he talks about of the nonviolent communication is the ability to communicate beyond words, is to be able to understand what a person is saying to you, not because of the words they're using, despite the words they're using. So when somebody is talking at you and they're using words that are really would otherwise make you very angry because you're listening to the words, nonviolent communication really talks about how you can look beyond that, those words, to understand what has made this person so angry, what has triggered them. And if you can develop that ability, you are going to be a fantastic leader. And just forget a leader, you're just going to be a happy person in life. You're not going to walk around unhappy because somebody said something to you. You're really going to be able to understand people, what is behind the words that they use. And so communication that helps you understand despite the words, not because of the words, I think is really a very, very powerful. And so that is one of my favorite books. I highly recommend people read that.
Whoa, I'm going to be checking that out. You've certainly got me intrigued. So I'll add that to the Amazon wish list. And for anyone listening wanting to dig a little bit deeper on Qualys, we've covered a lot today. Where would you like to point them if they want to find out more, check out an event, connect with you or your team? Where should the starting point be?
Connect with me on LinkedIn. I'll be happy to talk to each and every one of you. But Qualys.com is a pretty good place to go otherwise. So,
awesome. Well, I'll get links added to everything there too. And as I said, we covered a lot today, from why companies have had problems dealing with compliance and rule changes, and they're changing their approaches around risk as a result, why the cloud security market is up for grabs, and what you've learned from working at Qualys and sharing your personal journey, and leaving us with a great book for everyone to check out too. Just thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much, Neil. Thank you for having me.
I think what stood out most in my conversation with my guest today wasn't just his deep technical knowledge or even his incredibly thoughtful insights on risk. I think it was the emphasis on communication, not just reporting to a board, but in how we lead, how we assess, and how we respond to everything that's happening around us. Because yes, the tech will keep evolving, and AI will keep throwing up new questions. But cloud adoption is only going to accelerate too. So my guest's message is clear. Unless we learn to operationalize risk, define it, prioritize it, and communicate it in a way that aligns with business outcomes, then we're just going to be stuck playing cybersecurity whack-a-mole, and we all know what that feels like. So here's my big takeaway. The organizations that win won't be the ones with the flashiest dashboards. They'll be the ones who know when not to fix something, when to transfer a risk, and when to focus on what truly matters. And in a world full of alerts, we all know what alert fatigue looks like. I think the real challenge is clarity. So how are you managing your cyber risks? Are you tracking vulnerabilities, or are you quantifying consequences? Let me know your thoughts. Love to hear how your team is navigating this shift. Remember, you can connect with me on LinkedIn, Instagram, TikTok, in fact, any social channel, just at Neil C. Hughes. Let me know your thoughts. But that's it for today. So thank you for listening as always. And I'll be back again with another thought-provoking question tomorrow. And of course, Neil's one big takeaway. Speak with you all then.